It's here. Peloton's best offer of the season. Get up to $300 off accessories when you purchase a Peloton tread. Choose from accessories like a heart rate monitor, non-slip grip dumbbells, yoga blocks, and more. If you've been looking for a sign to join Peloton, this offer gives you everything you need to get going. Hurry. Peloton's best offer of the season is here, but not for long. Visit onepeloton.com to learn more. All access membership separate. Limited time offer cannot be combined with other offers. See additional terms at onepeloton.com.
There's only one review of the rings, only one that can bring the fan base to its will. And we do not share power. Welcome back to another review of the rings. We are going to be today reviewing Lord of the Rings, the review. Because I got it wrong, the review of the rings. The Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power is what I'm trying to say. Episode 5 was this week. If you remember last week, I was really, really positive. Kyle, not quite as much, but still kind of fairly positive. So let's see how kind of things went this week. As always, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like, subscribe. We've got, I think, just over 500 subscribers. How many have we got just now, Kyle?
562 right now.
We want to get that to over 1,000 for reasons. So, you know, help us out with that, please. If you like the show, you know, it would help. if you like it, you know. And as always, our details are on screen, so contact us, let us know what you'd like to see us discuss maybe more on the show or any of the shows that we cover in the Genreverse Podcast Network. Kyle will tell you kind of more about all the different options that are available for you if you're looking for some of the other genre and geek shit that we are into and that we like to talk about online. He'll tell you about that later on. I'm Cam Clark, this is Kyle Malone, we're back. So, Kyle, how are you?
Hanging in there, man. It's the weekend. Lots of stuff to catch up on. Christine's doing better, which is good. Although I cooked some sausage this morning, and I guess the COVID smell still all up in her nasal passages. So she was like, "No, nah, I'm not doing that." And it's good American sausage, you know.
Good American sausage, as opposed
So Britain, no, there is. So UK's got decent sausage too. Of course, Germany and some other Europeans do.
Germany must be the kings of the sausage.
But oh my God, does Japan have like shit tier sausage? Like there's like little Vienna sausage looking things, but they're breakfast sausages, and I'm just like, nah, man, that's
just doesn't cut.
So it was a dig to our friends out east, not to our former overseers across the Atlantic.
That's got to say, you'll take the sausages we designed and you'll like them.
Oh, I do. And God's honest truth, if I could get a Euro style bacon more regularly, I would probably die of a heart attack, because man,
I don't think hobbits would like bacon in America. No,
probably not, but I love the bacon in Ireland that we had, and I mean, American belly bacon is good, but back bacon, why it's called bacon, is pretty damn good too.
That's the only thing I would eat,
almost. Yeah, away from food.
Away from food. Well, you know, we're going to feast instead on. I'll tell you where we're going to start, Kel, because normally we start with you, so we're going to start with you again in terms of giving us your thoughts on the episode. But I'm also very intrigued because Kel sent me a message this morning, and all this message said was, "I can't wait to talk to you today because I'm upset."
Yes.
And I said, what? Upset? Why? What's, you know, I'm failing to see what it is that's been kind of so upsetting. So I'm intrigued because he would not tell me. So there may be something that you have to get into more in the spoiler section.
Yes.
Just to point out, will be doing non-spoiler reviews. We'll give our grades first, and then we'll get into a bit more detail where, you know, we're hoping that you've also watched the episode. Oh, you just don't give a shit, really, you know, about you spoilers. So go for it. What do you think of episode 5?
This was rushed. There's a lot in here, a lot of good stuff in here, but a lot of things that feel like you're missing context, or just would have been better had they pumped the brakes, maybe added another episode to this series and made it 9 instead of 8, to flesh this episode 5, a middle episode, out. Right. All three stories, the Southlands, Numenor, and the Elfdorf stuff going on. All three suffered from a bit of this. However, Numenor seemed to suffer the least with it. But there were still some issues. Now, what was it? Is it editing? Is the things that I wish or think should be there or might have been there, are they on the cutting room floor?
I'm trying to think how to get where you're coming from without getting any spoilers, because obviously you'll be able to say specifically, so they should have had more of this, they should have more of that once we get past that stage. So did it feel like, you know, it was all just too choppy, it all moved along too quick, it was plot-driven rather than character-driven? Is that maybe what you're trying to get at?
Maybe I'm not sure why it ended up this way, but that's what it was. And everything here is good. There were again a couple of technical issues. The wargs or wolves, whatever the Harfoots call them. Those again, when they were up close, it looked a little bit better this time than the orc camp.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yep.
When they were running away, the weight thing and the issue with ground contact was quite visible again. And for the first time, I think mostly because of how much more we saw, the printed scale undershirts under the armor definitely is rubbing me the wrong way. It bunches up a hell of a lot more. It doesn't feel or look like armor. It looks like instead of making under armor like chainmail and things that people would wear under the plates, they were trying to, you know, maybe efficiency, maybe comfort, maybe cost, whatever it was that caused them to just 3D print, you know, textures on it. That definitely became an issue to me, as I could see just bunched up.
So do you mean
up
the Numenorean armor, like they're wearing towards the end? It's
under the plate.
Pale, pale white, and there's that kind of, it's almost like, it looks as if it's supposed to have a chainmail effect underneath.
Yes,
but
like
you
a
can
scales
tell
or something. And yeah, it bunches up so much in fabric that, and again, it's been in past episodes, but here you see a lot more of it, and it just, it kind of took me out of the thing, because there was this, you know, just fabric bunched up underneath the arm, sticking out of the plates.
I think
that's
a fair
like
point.
That, so.
We, you know, I know Chammer and I disagreed with this. What's new, you know? But I don't think the costumes are as kind of as good as they were in the movies, even The Hobbit. I include within that because I had a lot of issues with The Hobbit, but the costuming department wasn't one of them. And it's just not, it does feel, you know, if maybe we had never seen those movies,
maybe,
and this was the first thing we'd seen, I'd maybe be more flexible towards it, to be fair.
Maybe.
But because we kind of have, and then I also compare it to maybe House of the Dragon, which I know it's a different feel tonally, so their armor's not supposed to be quite, you know, it's not made by elves and people with special powers, it's just dudes with hammers and metal, you know. It's, you know, it just doesn't feel as somehow lived in and real. And I know the Numenoreans don't have much sort of conflict history at this point. So it probably isn't used much, but that's the feel I kind of get, you know.
Yeah. And then I guess I'll say the last thing, not really a spoiler, but Galadriel does a sparring match. Guys, stop using, I know it looks cool and it makes characters seem really badass when they take on multiple people at one time, but you're always left with some choreography where someone is standing and could easily be attacked from behind, and there's literally a person just waiting behind for
the shot,
for the next move. Exactly. And that again is one of those little things. It's nitpicky, and it happens in Star Wars, it happens here, it happens everywhere. I'm not a big Game of Thrones fan, but I'm sure it's probably happened in there once or twice. It's annoying, guys, because you can see the person just standing there like, oh,
I think they can almost
bad. I hate that.
The antithesis of that is like the Battle of the Bastards episode. I know you've never watched Game of Thrones, which is...
Was that season 5? Because I watched all of season 5. Was that the one where like dudes like surrounded all around?
Yeah. And they're closing in and shit. Now that wasn't people waiting to have a fight. That was a genuine, you know. But
that's
the brutality of it. You know, I get, you know, that's what made that so special, I guess, if you like. So you don't normally see that in choreography, to be fair.
Yeah. So other than that, still really story-wise, solid, character-wise, solid, disappointing for the elf stuff. And we'll get into that with the spoilers. Disappointing in what I think was potentially missing, you know, so yeah.
Right. So I'll be interested to hear your kind of spoiler thoughts on that. I mean, what grade did you give it, first of all?
I think I would probably just give this a solid B.
Okay. So, I mean, we're not too much different. This is my kind of lowest rated episode. I gave it a B plus. There wasn't anything major jumping out that I particularly disliked, but, you know, I kind of felt like,
excuse me,
I don't know, the flow just didn't seem quite right this week compared to previous weeks. I don't know if that's... It's interesting, actually, that you said that you felt like it needed more time this episode to kind of spread out. Because one of the criticisms, I always talk about the criticisms I see online and how crazy they are people saying it's too slow and it needed to move a lot of those scenes along quicker. Do you know what I mean? So it just shows you that kind of subjective view out there that people have, and it just depends what you like as a show, what you like as a film and all that sort of stuff as well. So, you know, overall, there were some good moments, but there was also just a couple of little things that I'd have to get into specifics that didn't so much annoy me, but concerned me about the, you know, like a stone starts an avalanche, right? So something that happens now could have an impact in future seasons as we go along, if that makes sense. And there was a couple of little details were there where I thought, I don't know if I would have did that. You know, and I might be wrong and I might come back in the end and say, actually, you know, I was wrong and that was a really good choice. But at the moment, it just gives me that pause for doubt again. Whereas last week kind of won me over and I was like, I'm not such a fan of this show. There was such great things in there. This week kind of brought me back to that. They could still mess this up. They really could still mess this up. And I was worried again, you know, what being overly not liking anything. You talked about, and there's a sparring scene, we can talk about, you know, that without saying the major spoilers. Oh my God, those guys at Reviews of Power spoiling. I did not know Galadriel was going to spar someone. I'm seeing that now. I mean, you could have just watched the promo, which shows a little bit of that in it. But, you know, I think that, you know, we're not going to tell you the ins and outs of it. At first, I was like, no, please no. Right? I was like, don't do this. Do you know what I mean? Because it started badly for me, but they kind of won me over in the end. And one of the things I think they tried to do to counter your point, right, is they put a pillar almost in the way, right, where that takes place. And I think that was to try and hide that fact that, you know, like what I would go back to is, like, do you remember in Daredevil, the first season of Daredevil, they have the corridor fight?
Yeah.
And because of the environment they're in, the corridor fight works because it's hard for people to gang up them. So they're kind of all coming in one at a time and it was easy to choreograph. I think they tried to do that here and like 80% they got it right, but there was a couple of moments that fell off. But I really did hate the way that started because I won't get into it until we get into spoilers, but I just at that point I was like, please don't do this. And then there's like, it wasn't that bad, you know. There was a couple of little lore details which get into, again, I'll get into in the spoilers, that I was like, okay. And I guess here's my thing. I'm going to talk about a little bit about, you know, if you've not watched any of these episodes at all, what you're doing even watching this review show. But, you know, if you've just not watched this week's, the big talk online has been who is Sauron, right? And who is Sauron? And is Sauron going to be a main character? I kind of feel like they keep giving us, they're trying to play to that too much now. Does that
kind
make
like
sense?
Kind of like the Mephisto thing from Marvel?
You know, almost.
Even though
they
didn't play into it willingly, they were playing into it. If you believe Kevin Feige, they were playing into it by borrowing everything with the guy and then just cutting him out, including stuff from No Way Home where they used the One More Day story.
A similar kind of example, but maybe a different kind of reason behind it and stuff like that, I guess. But, you know,
this might be more on purpose.
Yes, absolutely. I think they've known going in that they were going to tease this and going to try and make everybody think that Sauron could absolutely be anybody. It could be that rock sitting over there, you know what I mean? And realistically, if Sauron just is three different people, let's just say, for example, you couldn't say, oh, that's terrible. It could actually work. But yeah. I think they're giving us all the reasons why it's not certain people and then keeping teasing other things that could be it. And I'm kind of getting a bit just fed up with it now, because I don't believe any of these people are Sauron for a second. And if any of them are, I'm going to be really upset, because then there has been some bad writing, because I'm going to start going back and looking at that character's history and going, why would Sauron do this? And why would Sauron do that? And, you know, and it just, the list for each, we'll get to it when we get to spoilers, but the list for each is too much. So, you know, for a fan like me that maybe knows the lore enough to be able to say, well, none of these people make sense, I'm not particularly enjoying that aspect of it anymore. Whereas for the casual people that, you know, don't know the lore, the internet's still full of, oh my God, this week proved that so-and-so is Sauron. And I'm like, really?
Well, what do you think that this is kind of similar to the Wheel of Time and the Chosen One or whatever? I forget what the title was.
That's a good point. No. No, I don't think that's good.
That's a good point. It's a solid logical avenue of approach, but
here's my reasoning behind that. Because as we talked about in Wheel of Time, there was a mystery of who the dragon was not the a dragon, mystery to anyone who read the books. It was
right.
It wasn't ever made implicit, but it was so obvious, because no one writes a book where any other character could have been the dragon if it wasn't him. It just didn't make any sense, right? Where they never explicitly say it. Plus, they give you lots of hints that you're supposed to pick up on. Yet, at the same time, there were people confirmed I've spoke to online who didn't realise Rand was the dragon until book two. And you're like, what? You know what I mean? How is that even possible? I don't get it. So, I think the difference is, I think the show were kind of right to do that in some respects, but by where they maybe did play into it a little bit too much at certain points that we discussed during the series as well. Like they tried to do a couple of things here and there to make that seem like it could be other people that they didn't need to. And I wonder whether maybe something similar's happening here, but it's in a different way. I think, you know, I mean, I don't think it's the same situation. I just think there may be some similarities, though, to what you were discussing. So, my kind of non-spoiler thoughts this week, if you like.
Cool. Where are we starting with the spoilers today, man? We got three arcs. Where do you want to go first?
Spoiler alert. We're going to get into it. Okay, so you talked about, I want to hear what you thought about the whole elf stuff and what was going on with the elves and what you were your concerns there. Let's start with the whole London part of the episode.
We know that a lot of people, including myself, I think even you have said that the stuff with Elrond and Durin, is it D-U or T-U?
D. D for Delta. Okay,
because I saw someone type it out as T-U.
And so there's online, another character in the Legendarium called Turin.
Oh, maybe.
And it's really a famous character, so you could be maybe, getting mixed up.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. No problem then. But we've all really enjoyed Durin and Elrond. Mm-hmm. And we've been hungry for more of the Elrond and Celebrimbor, because that's going to be a big deal. I've been waiting to see more of their interactions and everything. And Gil-galad, his talks, we've only got one talk with him and Elrond before
Elrond.
way back in the first or second episode after they send Galadriel off. We know from context that Gil-galad probably sent Elrond with his own, you know, desires and without telling Elrond. So that context is fine when we get to the dinner table. But what wasn't fine was, you know, having Celebrimbor already know about the Mithril, having Celebrimbor and Gil-galad having more talks off camera about the issues. We needed some additional time with one of those two pairs, either more of a scene with Celebrimbor and Elrond set before the dinner that kind of leads to you understanding that Celebrimbor has more going on, is more connected to some of the stuff that you see with Gil-galad and Elrond in the early episodes, or you should have shown Celebrimbor and Gil-galad's in having a discussion or something right before the dinner scene. Something to flesh, because when we get to the dinner and it's just Gil-galad hard hitting the dwarf, the dwarf punching back, which is good. I love all that.
Yeah,
but
scene's fine. Yeah, I get
it. It felt like I was dropped into something that I knew enough to understand it. But God, would it not have been better and feel more complete, less rushed, if we'd had one of those two types of conversations to help build up that tension a little bit more, instead of just being dropped into the, hey, what do you got going on in your mind? You insulted my people with this table. Beautiful joke, though. I love that whole bit.
I see the biggest
issue there.
There's a couple of things here. So I see what they're trying to show, not tell. So they're trying to say that you are coming at this from, let's say, Durin and Elrond's point of view, not Gil-galad's and Celebrimbor's, right? Mm-hmm. And all we know from Durin is that something's going on, but he doesn't quite know what. And we know that Elrond doesn't really understand what's going on, but Durin's now confided in him. Mm-hmm. So we're their point of view when they come into the table to sit down for the first time, and they're supposed to show us that by their actions you can tell that there is something going on there, and then later on they explain it. I think.
But why and when did Elrond tell Celebrimbor about the Mithril? Not a big deal?
Maybe it was Gil-galad and Celebrimbor talking about this.
In the scene he's like, about this Mithril. He's like, what about this Mithril? Like, he says it right there. That's why I'm saying, like, they should have at least had something with Celebrimbor and Elrond before the dinner. It could have been a day before the dinner, whatever.
I'll agree with
just
that.
Just something.
Yeah. I agree with that.
And it becomes a bigger issue when you look at the other two sides. When you can see if you agree with my other two parts of the stories also having some rushed elements, you can see where all three of them having that element, it definitely became kind of grating to where you're like, okay, this feels like a rushed episode or a misedited episode. What's missing? Is there something missing? I don't know what it was, why it ended up this way, but yeah, that's.
I mean, it was already a long ass episode, so I'm wondering whether they feel that they had to cut a few things from this.
Should have made a ninth episode. This should have been episodes five and.
I mean, or
six,
just
then,
make it even longer. Just make it a longer episode, because who cares? You know what I mean? People are not complaining about the length of the episodes at all. Not that I can, unless it's like, no. I hate this. You know, 1 minute was enough, and why do you keep watching every episode?
So yeah, that's my issue with that. But the rest of it and the core of it, I love. And I love Elrond's dedication to his friend. I love I'm wondering how far he was willing to walk that line. But like I said, the fact that Celebrimbor already knew is weird to me, because he swore an oath. He's not willing to break it to Gil-galad, but he was willing to break it to...
It seems to me that happened afterwards. But then, should that not have been after he had the discussion with Durin? You know, and Jordan's like, all right, you know, we'll try and convince my dad, and, you know, we'll see if we can mine some of this shit. Let's go for it, kid.
So it's kind of wonky.
Yeah.
Hence the beef. one of the reasons, but yeah.
I have a little bit of issues with some of the lore at this bit as well. So they tell a nice little story, and the way they present it is really nice. They show you a kind of drawing of an elf and a Balrog. A tree. Mm-hmm. But even Elrond talks about this as not necessarily a true story. It's a myth even for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they're basing all of this on this myth that they might not even be true, that there's this stuff in the mountain? How would they have got an inkling that it could have been there in the first place? The dwarves were very secretive about it. So something doesn't quite make sense for me. Then we add in the actual fates of all the Silmarils, right? So one of them is on Elrond's dad's head, flying about right. in space, right? So that's star. One.
Yep.
One of them is Maglor cast into the sea and is in the depths of the ocean somewhere. Maglor, the one who I said possibly could be Adar, yep. right? The next one did end up in like a mountain, volcano, trapped under the bowels of the earth, you know, part of the, you know, but the idea was it went into like the crust of the earth and will yeah. never be kind of seen again. Where does the tree come into all of that? And you know what I mean? The whole story of this. I mean, it's a nice, it's almost like a Tolkien-like story. I get it, mm-hmm. but it's a complete invention for this show. Well, and it seems to be almost like they're trying to give some magical quality to Mithril that maybe it didn't have before, right? So
that's what I was going to ask is, so we know that Mithril is a great armor, and if mm-hmm. you've seen the movies and if you've read the books, from what I can remember, it's just a, hey, this is really good stuff. It's like, it's not like a...
It's the Damascus steel of
yeah,
the...
Yeah, it wasn't
the,
like...
Right?
Yeah, it wasn't like this was some... Game of some, Holy Valerian Grail thing steel, that the whole
you know,
world wanted, you
Lord
know?
Of
yeah.
Mithril. It's, yeah. It's made up, but it's not...
So is this
like,
just a...
Magical as such.
So they're just using this for right. their story, basically, then, right?
Well,
is that the feeling?
Well, yeah, okay. Because, you know, it's not that Tolkien really went into the details of where Mithril came from, other than that its other name was True Silver. And there could be a connection, therefore, between silver, as in moonlight, which, you know, mm-hmm. is now... Oh, this is really getting into this. I have to be careful how deep I go into this, right? So there could be a connection, theoretically, that Tolkien never talked about in an offhand way between Moonlight, Mithril, and Moonlight does connect to the Silmarils because the Silmarils contain the light of the two trees. The Nighttime Tree, if you like, is the one that a bit of it went up with to make the moon, right? So
yep.
Cut all that story short right there and then, that's it. But my concern with this is, right, we know in the lore that one of the rings, at least one of the rings of power, one of the Elven Three, is made of Mithril. Now, in the movies, it's the one that Galadriel wears called Nenya. That is made completely of Mithril, right? There, we don't know what the other ones were made of because it was never specifically sort of stated, but one of them, I think, the one Gandalf wears is gold, so you wouldn't think automatically Mithril with that one, you know?
Yeah. Could be an alloy.
I don't know about the other one. The other one Sirdan's got at that point. Is it Sirdan? No, it's not Sirdan. Who's got the third elf ring at the point of Lord of the Rings? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Doesn't matter. Probably Elrond, actually. As you know, so there is Mithril involved in the creation of at least, you know, one of the Elven Rings guaranteed. But I think what they're doing is they're trying to make it that almost, let me explain, right? Tolkien doesn't have a hard magic system, right? So when Tolkien uses magic, it's mysterious. He never explains it completely. He never explains the limits of Gandalf's power.
It's one of the most infuriating things there is.
Right, okay. that style is what allows countless years of discussion in the fan base afterwards about, you know, what specifically could people do and couldn't they do, right?
I know. You're talking to a Final Fantasy player, so my magic needs hard rules. I need levels and
so
cost.
As opposed to, let's say, Wheel of Time, which we review as well, which is a hard magic system, right? The author explained what it can do, what its limits are, where it comes from, all of that sort of stuff. What I'm getting at is that it kind of feels to me that they are creating a hard magic system for how the power of the three Elven Rings work, or what the magic of the Rings of Power is, because they've all got Mithril in them. And I think that, I don't know if I really like that, because, you know, I don't think that's a necessity. You know, it's not as if Mithril's just the magic, you know, it's not unobtainium, you know, or something like that, where it's all about that. And oh, no, rings.
That makes sense where they're talking, it's got the light in us, and
yeah,
I can see. I can, and you know, as someone that isn't as well versed in the lore, I really don't mind it. Like, I can see why they would want to use it. It's tangible enough from the books and the movies. It's something that you can naturally work in between the relationship that you've built with Durin and Elrond. But I can also see your point to where it's like you're making a bigger deal out of something and you might be explaining a little bit too much. I can kind of see where that might get.
To me, it's where what concerns me more is it's not like, okay, I know the lore's going to be different. I accept that.
Right.
And maybe this works out in the end and it works. It's quite a good device and I don't mind that. I'm prepared to accept that potentially, depending on what they do with it.
As long as it's good, right?
The characters, though. I don't get why Gil-galad and Celeb Brimbor. Well, I have one possible solution. I'll give you a theory in a minute.
Being so shady.
Yeah. I don't see why they would put so much stock into this legend without some kind of proof, some kind of hard evidence that they had beforehand.
Yeah.
You know,
hearing that rumbling. Huh?
You know, yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah. But, I mean, that is more backstory for it, because this has clearly been going on since before episode one, right?
Yes.
Of the show. That's the point. And we don't necessarily know, because we're not following him yet as a main character. We're not in Gil-galad's headspace or Celebrimbor's headspace yet. I think we will get into some of their headspaces in later seasons. So we're seeing it from Elrond and Durin's point of view. Again, go back to what I said at the start and how they see it, but unless they give me some more later on, which I can go back and go, that makes sense, where they've actually got this, why they've believed that legend. I just don't see why Gil-galad, you know, who's a pretty wise person, and they wrote down a lot, would just believe some legend that was never written down and they never had any solid basis for. The elves kept good records, you know. That's where the Silmarillion comes from. The elves' records. You know, that's the whole point. It's written by their record keepers and Numenor's record keepers. And then eventually Frodo translates it all and writes it all down and stuff like that. That's the whole point. So I don't know. But here's my theory that might explain it. I again, will go back to the Sauron thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think we have met Sauron yet. Or if we have, it's... We would only find it in passing later on, because he could theoretically be in multiple places at a time.
Right.
I mean, he could turn into a bat and fly if he wanted to, you know. But I think they have even possibly faster methods of travel, where they can probably just become smoke or something and jam across mountains, probably.
Lightning.
I mean, travel at the speed of light. Maybe, I don't know. Again, Tolkien never gets into that kind of detail to see exactly how they can work. So there is a lot of interpretation.
One of the key things is you can't F-16
you can't make
jets
people
across the sky.
Too powerful. You know, one of the beauties of Tolkien is you hold back as much as you can on the power. You know, almost like Star Wars does. It never makes the Jedi. You know, you don't get that power creep where, you know, suddenly, you know, Luke and Vader are get galaxies in their hands.
It's not anime. Love stuff like that in anime.
But, I mean, I get
sometimes,
it. There's a place
sometimes.
For it. There is a place.
Oh, yeah. But
if
not,
you create your
not
universe
here,
with that
there,
in mind.
Yeah.
But you can't just suddenly change a universe from one thing to another. So that's what I'm getting at.
Yep, 100% agree.
So my theory is that what we're going to find out is behind, you know, that tree that's getting all blackened and everything like that, and that's got them worried. I think the person causing that to happen directly is Sauron. I don't think by just his presence being back or anything like that, the shit that you see happening in Mordor, I think that's different. I think he might actually be there in Lindon. We haven't seen him yet, but he's there, and he's got Celebrimbor's ear already, and it's his ideas that are feeding this. So what if we could do this? What if we could find some way to trap the light, etc., etc., etc.? Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But what I'm worried about is that they try and explain the ring's powers too much, because they are left that a little bit.
I mean,
vague.
It is called the Rings of Power, so I expect but a healthy dose of explaining.
Explicitly, you know, they all have, but we know what the all three of them do, but I don't need to know the ins and outs of how they made them to be able to do that, and then what, you know, Sauron goes on. So, step one. You know, and he adds bits to it, you know.
You need two parts, Mithril. One part.
I don't want to see Sauron do that, you know. I just and want that, to see that, some cool shots here. And Orange that, Rune.
That kiln has to be at 250,000. Yeah. No more, no less. Otherwise, the whole thing's just ruined.
It, you know, some magic. The elves have a certain amount of magic in them. And Celebrimbor as a descendant, I think he's a grandson of Feanor. You know, there is just some magic that was in Feanor that the Valar couldn't even do. Like, he was the only one that could have made the Silmarils. And once he made them, no one else could have ever broken them. Not even the Valar could have smashed them or broke them. He was the only one that knew the secrets to unlocking that, you know, and he refused to tell anyone else. So there's some magic in that bloodline where they can just create shit, right? And that's, there's an element of that in the Rings of Power for me. It's not just Sauron, it's Celebrimbor and Sauron together that makes that magic spark, where they get these things together.
I like that
so I'm
idea.
Wondering whether Sauron's really there, and at the end of the season, we're going to get introduced to a character called Annatar. Like Celebrimbor's going to turn around and go, Elrond, can I introduce you to Annatar? He's been helping me in this process.
Yeah,
and we're like, there's Sauron.
Some middling elf just walking around is the big bad. I could see that. Where are we going to next, Cam?
I don't know. What other points did you have that you wanted to discuss?
Okay, well,
I've got over most of my gripes and complaints and stuff.
So on the Numenor side of things, I pull out my notes real quick. The whole mission woes, the sabotage. Like I said, this story had the least amount of like feeling rushed. Most of this stuff we've spent enough time on that we have enough context. Some of the stuff with the Roman guy, the guy that looks like a Roman.
Okay, it's just not the best
it
costume.
Is,
he's
awful,
going to keep it. He's going to have it every week, clearly, because it's
I know,
only
I know,
suit he's
right?
got. Not the best.
But him, Isildur's sister, like some of that stuff, yeah, that felt kind of choppy. You're like, okay, yeah, we know there's some anti-elf stuff there, but all of a sudden you're supposed to whip up this group against the queen's wishes. That was really the only one where I was kind of like, maybe you guys needed to fill that character out a bit more. Maybe it's the costume.
I kind of felt
me off.
Like they needed to, it was like almost like last week they hadn't done enough jobs subtly, like showing where Farazan's
coming
from.
Yeah,
where
exactly.
the sun's coming from, why there is a dissension of what people want, that they felt they had to give it one step further this week, if that makes sense. And I'm not sure that was necessarily needed. Isildur's story.
Yeah.
But, you know, him stowing away and then the whole barrel thing, and they come back and everybody's like, oh, yeah, somebody blew up a barrel. It's clearly fucking you two, wasn't it? You know, if I was Elendil, I'd be like, well, what were you two doing in the boat at that time?
It was
just
a way for the writers to get him back on the boat.
I know, back on the boat.
Under his dad's good graces.
I think they
could have done it better.
Something else, for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Have them just do something that is heroic that happened all of a sudden, you know, rather than something that was a bit more contrived.
And with the duel, you know, the group duel against Galadriel, for the most part, it's fine. It's a bit corny. And to anyone out there that wants to go marry Sue again, she's thousands and thousands of years old. She has been fighting, like she said, that's all she knows how to do.
Yeah.
For centuries, she has been fighting, and these are Numenorians who can live a while. They don't live as long as her, and these were young Numenorians.
If we were going by the books, and who could 1v1 Galadriel at this point? You're looking at Gil-galad, maybe Elendil in the books, right? I don't know what his skills is like in the show, because we haven't seen him fight yet, but in the books, and Sauron himself.
Yeah.
And you
said Sauron would be like, let me prep.
Sauron's not
let me do some Batman prep.
It's never been a fighter.
Yeah.
I mean, Sauron fought Galadriel's brother reluctantly, but, you know, I won't go into all the ins and outs of what happened that because it's complicated, but it wasn't a straight fight, and Sauron is not the kind of person that has a fair fight with somebody for you know, to prove they're a good fighter. That's not
the duel was fine overall. Like I said, my biggest issue was the choreography. You get to the point where you literally have two of the people just waiting behind for their move, for their turn.
Yeah, yeah.
I did like that. How it ended up, the dude did manage to, you know, cut through her fabric.
That.
I wish they would have actually shown, because you just see cut through the fabric. So I thought maybe she didn't get cut, because they said you got to cut flesh. You should have seen blood or skin through the cut, in my mind, because I was actually questioning whether or not it was going to play into the story where she was like, look, he didn't score flesh, but that guy, you know, I thought maybe they were going to set something up, but in reality, they were like, yeah, that's good enough.
I thought at first they were going to have Isildur jump in, and it would have been Isildur that scored a hit against her.
That would have been better to get on his dad's good graces than the
sabotage
thing.
You said they would promote you, and then his dad's like, I can't promote somebody that's not even a soldier, so piss off. But then he went, all right, maybe I should, you know, bring you in, but I'm putting you at the lowest level. But I kind of like how they're giving Morty some of his friends as well. One of the things I do appreciate about that battle is they didn't make the Numenoreans look crap. You know, was more just that
talented.
She is
a step
an
above.
Elf versus a man is usually a one-sided battle anyway, right? Because we've talked about this before. Elves are like superhuman compared to men, right? Mm-hmm. So she's got that advantage right away. Strength, speed, you know, experience, thousands and thousands of years fighting in battles, the countless that most humans would never fight in one single lifetime. You know, she's got all that going for her. So you don't expect them to compete with her. But I like that they were not shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That they actually, you know, they did have some good moves and they were good fighters. Because the Numenoreans also come from, you know, high stock there. You know, these are the legends that, you know, are the forebears of Aragorn, who's one of the greatest fighters in the, you know, and by the time we get to the movies and stuff like that. So I was quite pleased they didn't make them look like idiots.
Yeah, and I guess maybe there's been enough over the few episodes, but it feels kind of like it's been a while since we've dealt with Halbrand for a minute. So his turn from no reluctant king to, yeah, fuck it, I'll damn it, see, there goes an F-bomb. I think one I can get away with without marking explicit. I think his turn to from reluctant to, you know, screw it, I'll do it, felt not necessarily quick here, but it just felt like, I know it needed to happen here, but I felt like we should have had more of his interactions closer to that, to this moment. But overall, okay.
You know, there's still people killed that are convinced Halbrand's Sauron.
Really?
Yeah.
It's all
I mean,
right.
Why would he do any of the things that he's doing if he's Sauron? I just don't get it.
I don't know. And Sauron doesn't possess people like straight up to control and puppet like that, does he? Whenever he's taken a persona that's something of his own or what?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't have any way to kind of
quantify
that. Well,
I didn't know
that.
if in
nothing,
the books he had ever.
No, because he doesn't, you know, the
possess.
Only time we hear about him appearing in a fair form really is when he goes to try and, you know, convince the elves to make the rings of power and teach them ring lore and all that sort of stuff, and there's not that much written about what actually happens. All we know is that he gets rejected by Gil-galad, supposedly gets rejected by Galadriel, and then gets accepted by Celebrimbor. You know, that's basically the way it works in the lore. And then they find out when it's him, when he goes off and makes the One Ring and puts it on, they go, oh, we've been deceived, you know, and you get all of that from the prologue of Lord of the Rings movie, The Fellowship of the Ring. So, you know, we know.
I guess let's talk real quick about the Southlands.
I mean, I was going to say, we've still got the Southlands or the Harfoots, so which one would you rather talk about?
I'll say the Harfoots for last, because I know you got some theories on Meteor Man and some more stuff after this episode. not too much to say with the Southlands, but they did have, again, the issue with things being fast. The whole pep speech from the would-be queen in the South, if you will.
Yeah.
It came on real sudden. The way we feel from episode to episode is they've only been in this tower a couple of days. We haven't seen much other than the one time where she's discussing food, where any type of rousing speech would really lead to something for or from her. It felt, again, rushed. It's not that this shouldn't have happened. There just should have been more before it happened. More choices she was making, something that showed that the people actually have some trust and value in her. Because when we get to it and she's like, let's fight, you're like, for what? For who? No,
I get you. Where I would say is actually, and what her giving that rousing speech, then despairing herself later on, mm-hmm. to Arendir didn't make sense to me. The despair scene should have come before. Then Arendir gives her the pep talk. Then the speech should come afterwards, if that makes sense. In fact, it would have been better for Waldrick to take people away before she made the speech, and then she makes the speech to just the people who are left. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Or at the same, you know, almost like, so it's not like she's having to give a pep speech. But I've got a few issues with this storyline. Was it just those three elves in that tower? In that watchtower, and they were all passing.
It seems like it.
Because where are all the
I think there was maybe
elves?
A few more. Well, they were pulling out, so I'm guessing other outposts, camps,
we were all
and,
saying like,
and things.
Well, they never attacked the tower, so all they got was the people who were out looking for Arendir, his friends. So his commander and his pal were out looking for him. They caught them as well. Where did all the other elves go? Was it just the three of them in that tower? So there should be more elves there, I think. And it would have been interesting to explore them, maybe being less trustful of the humans and thinking they're just as, you know, having that attitude again. I have another query about there, is they find this statue with what looks like this evil blade.
Yes.
And what's clear from that is that the elven structure above it was built on top of something that was actually there to worship Morgoth in the first age, or else why would there be a statue of this evil being holding that specific sword?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, why would the elves absolutely leave that there? They would, you'd think they would have get rid of that, like painted.
Maybe,
like, if you went into your house and you bought a new house, Kyle, and there was a satanic ritual stuff painted in the basement, and you know, all you could clear, like, there's been a bit of blood.
Can I convert the house? Is my zoning, does it allow me to make a haunted house every Halloween and charge money? Because then I don't know.
But you'd probably just put a paint on it, you know, or you'd go, I'm covering that up with a wardrobe.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Where was the wardrobe guy and that, you know, because they let moss and vines grow over the top of it and then just left this horrific statue there. That didn't make sense to me either. So maybe explain. You know, this is where I could accept a bit of exposition where he says, look at this. Our tower was built over the top of, you know.
Yep.
And
despite,
you know,
our attempts, nothing could break this rock or
maybe
something
like that,
you know.
So we just figured we'd grow leaves over the top of it to hide it, you know. That's exposition I can get behind, you know. Whereas it was just, look at this. It just so happens this statue is right here where we need it to be. And this explains to us that this is some sort of symbol where if you stab somebody with a sword, some bad shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's what it seems like to me. Somebody has to use the sword, then stab somebody else with it, and then something else will happen.
Yeah.
That's what the statue seems to be indicating to me. What? I don't know.
Well, we'll probably find out in a couple of episodes at least, because that's been a bit of a MacGuffin for this first season. You ready to talk some Harfoots?
Yeah, why not?
So what are you thinking on Meteor Man now, man? He's learning some common tongue, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
He's learning a little bit of common, he's learning a little bit about, like, the world itself, and displayed some magic powers he may or may not control very well.
So, I like the way that when he's learning new words, it's in Norrie's accent, because that's where he's learning them from, so he's bringing the same accent with him, you know, so that's nice. But I feel that it's taken maybe a little bit too long for him to kind of work out who he is. I kind of feel that the first thing you would say to somebody is, you know, me Nori, what's your name? You know what I mean? And like, before he couldn't talk, he just writes a kind of rune, if you like, or a star map. I'd kind of feel that they should maybe be progressing that, because I'm getting a bit bored, the kind of mute guy that can't speak anymore. I want to actually get to the point where, but I feel that they're going to keep this hanging on for the whole of season one, and then they're going to say, huh, you thought it was Sauron, but it's not really, it's this guy, and then suddenly he's going to be like normal after that, and you know, he'll just have suddenly got to the point, oh, I've got my speech back. And,
do people,
you know,
online still think
power.
he's
Gandalf?
There's
a lot of people still think he could be Gandalf, yeah. There is.
How are you feeling? Still solid blue elf or blue elf.
I mean, all we can do is go by the lore here. So if we go by the lore, it shouldn't be Gandalf, right? Because there is talk that Gandalf did visit Middle Earth in the Second Age, but he wouldn't have done it as an Istari, which means trapped in a human body. Now, what they're going to great care, I think, to show in this is that this is a being that's not used to being in a human body. You see it when he slams the ground. And afterwards,
he's
he doesn't understand what the bruising is. What's that? You know, what's pain? What's death? You know, he doesn't know these things, you know. And it's not like a Maya wouldn't understand this, but they, you know, they can't contain all of that infinite knowledge in a human brain. So it, like, takes a while for their human brain to jumble it all up and they forget shit, you know. That's kind of the way the process works. So they don't have their full knowledge, they don't have their full power. You know, they've not been sent there to, Sauron's one, we'll send you four, go kick his ass and bring him back here. Because the last time they did that, it destroyed an entire continent. You know what I mean? That's the point. That's how they get rid of Morgoth. You know, but if they do keep doing that all the time, then there's going to be no land for them to live on, you know. So they don't do that, you know, this time they don't interfere, and this is their way of helping, but putting limits on it so they can't go kind of power to power. And to me, that's what they're showing with this character. They're showing that he has clearly wizard-like abilities. He is not a human, but he's trapped in a human-like kind of body, if you like, and he's bound by its limitations and doesn't understand them at this moment in time. And I mean, I think the whole, they're trying to, again, with the whole Sauron, like the way the ice goes up her, you know, arm and all that sort of stuff. I just think that was her putting her hand where it shouldn't have been.
Yes.
Him not being able to fully control his powers properly.
Yes.
I mean, it seems like he's almost sorry for what he did to the Fireflies in that earlier episode. You know, and even Nori says to him, it was just an accident. Do you know what I mean? You didn't mean to do that. And I do
You're
actually believe that at this point.
I think that was the word they were using.
Yes, he calls him, I'm out of peril. Yeah, and she's saying, no, you're good. But they could, just for dramatic effect, turn around, it was Sauron all along. And, you know, at that point, I may not do this podcast anymore, because that's the point I would probably switch off from this show, because I would just go, sorry, that's just bad writing. So if they made that character Sauron now, it's just bad writing for me, because why would Sauron limit himself to the way an Istari? He is not an Istari.
Yeah.
He is a Maia who is not bound by any of those rules. He could appear any way he wants. He would have his full capacity of knowledge. So why behave like this? What's the purpose of it all? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I can see that. Definitely. Well, any other thoughts, man?
I've probably talked enough. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'm good as well. It's been a fun show. Definitely one of the lows for the series for different reasons, but not bad. And it's always weird. It's always weird to talk negative stuff like that and be like, you know, we still like it. It's much different than when people were talking about 2016. Oh, the writing is bad versus, hey, you needed a little bit more here or to cut it differently. The writing was bad. The graphics aren't great. The pacing's weird, and the comedy is a little too much. But I still really like the movie. Give it an A. And it's like, no, you didn't. You hated it, and you just didn't want to be called something. This it is kind of weird to be negative on it, but still have it had been good. And I hope,
but if we didn't have criticism, that would be an A every week.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and not every episode needs to be an A plus every week. I mean, it would be great if they could manage that, but I don't think even Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul managed an A plus every week. You know, there was some episodes you were like, it was a B.
We're not Nick grading a Marvel show, so.
does he like She-Hulk so far?
Dude, he gave the first four episodes A's and A minuses.
Okay, but what about episode 5?
I think he gave it a B something. That one, I think he gave a B as well.
Because the last two were all.
Or maybe a C. I was like,
I kind of liked it up to that. I wouldn't have given it any of them an A, but I kind of liked it up to that. But the last two were awful.
None of them are. Anyways.
But Lord of the Rings of Power is still decent at the moment. We're still watching it so far. I'm still looking forward to watching the new show when it comes out every Friday, for sure.
Yep, absolutely. And you guys can hear our reviews on that on the Genreverse podcast network and YouTube channel. Lots of great shows, like Breaking Geek Radio does a little bit of everything. Long form, very long form. But we use timestamps for you guys, so you can hop through the topics. Daily Cog does that, but more often during the week and is much shorter. The Cantina's doing Andor right now. Marvel Multiverse Mayhem's doing She-Hulk. We have Anime Versal Reviews. We're doing our finale review of Classroom of the Elite Season 2 live. So if you're into anime or you watch that and you're here checking this out as well, don't forget about the live show Monday night, 9:15 p.m. Eastern time. What else do we got? Oh, AVR Squared reactions and genre shot trailer reactions. All the podcasts go up in audio format on all of the popular apps like Google and Spotify, Apple, and of course the website lrmonline.com every day for all your entertainment news, needs, opinions, written articles, celebrity interviews, and more.
It's a lot to say, but you know, we've got a lot of content. Much as that,
it's a lot.
It's a Saturday, mate. We tend to do that's the only thing I don't dislike about Friday shows. When they're on that late, you have to record them on a Saturday.
Yeah, because Cam has to go play soccer or some crap like that. Whatever.
Yeah, I play football on a Friday, mate. I don't
know. We done. But we out.
We're out. See you next week, folks. We'll be back for obviously episode 6. We've got episode 6, 7, and 8 to go. So there's 3 episodes left, and we'll get to the finale, and we'll maybe get some answers to some of the questions we had this week. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino online.
I was only playing for fun, so winning was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's favorite free online social casino. You, too, could have the chance to win life-changing cash prizes. Absolutely anybody could be like Mary. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and play for free now. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of the winner.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.